Accession number 23447, reel 15.
Mr. Waller, reel 15. We're talking about your time at Gluckstadt. They're all the naval barracks, in the former German naval barracks. Were there any other German naval personnel in the barracks?
Yes, there were some German, about a couple of hundred German naval personnel.
What happened to them?
Well, for a while they were based there for about 3 or 4 weeks. And there, we used to escort them down, or well, say we, not me personally, but we. They were escorted down to... They were on mine sweeping, clearing the mines out the River Elbe. And it was the attitude, well, you put them there, so you clear them. And if they go off, bang, hard luck. And we had them for 3 or 4 weeks, and then they, in turn, were shipped off to a POW camp. And our battalion were all in the barracks... And the rest of the division, particularly the armour division, were sent over for the victory parade at Berlin. I mean, I don't know where they were, sort of Lüneburg Heath, but they disappeared and our battalion was left in sole charge of Gluckstadt and the surrounding area.
So you were separated from the rest of 7th Div? 7th
Armoured Div, yeah. So it was virtually our battalion, with a few odd attached people from the Service Corps or Ordnance Corps, but we were more or less just left there.
And what were you doing once the German naval?
We weren't really doing anything. We were just there, occupying the place, waiting more or less for what's going to happen. And then we settled down... gradually into a very nice peaceful life, because they said, well, you'll be here, the officers found it great because they used the horses and went out riding, we organised football matches, we had the pitch, we organised football matches against Inter Platoon and then later on against a German team.
Did you play?
Yeah, I played for. And we lost, incidentally, to Germany. And what was it? Church Army came up. It's Church of Scotland, that's right. Church of Scotland, came up and opened a canteen. And we were really just sitting there, and then they started, oh, we better start a training program, you know, good move. Well, what they did, they went round and they more or less looked at people with the Africa Star, because that was the only campaign medal that had been issued up to then. And by that time, I was a sergeant again, and... They went round and they said, well, it's no good, the people with the Africa Star, they're going to get demobbed first, they're going to be the early ones. No point in putting them on training programs, it was the young people that were going to be there. So they were all deciding what jobs they could give the old hands. I can remember, you know, one of the sergeants was made MT sergeant. In other words, he was in charge of all the trucks and the vehicles and the petrol. And in other words, if you wanted to pass, if you wanted a vehicle, wanted a Jeep or anything to say go to Hamburg, which was about 30 kilometres away, he was the person that did it. Another one was put in charge of signals, so that everybody, any signal that came through, he dealt with the company commander. One was put in charge of the PRI, which is the unit canteen. I was given the job of orderly room sergeant. And I think, what was the sixth one? I can't remember, but we all had these jobs.
So it was the NCOs who were exempt more than the...
Well, yeah, the others got more or less found easy jobs as well, you know. I mean, I got a chap with me in the orderly room.
Now, what were your duties in the orderly room then?
Well, the first thing we were doing was... The first thing that happened was stacks and stacks of amendments to the King's regulations started coming through. You know, and you'd get a page, a book page, so, you know, and it'd go on and on and on and on. Then it'd say, page so-and-so, paragraph so-and-so, line so-and-so, for the, will you alter that to two? And that was the sort of thing. Others would change. And what we got, I had one chap. All he did was sit there with a pair of scissors and cut the line out of the place, cut it out, stick a bit of paste, and stick it in the book. And he was doing this day after day. And that was, he used to get bored. And strangely enough, this was the time when he, I said, well, that was, you know, find yourself something to do. And he looked through, and this is when he came across the my citation, which had never materialised. So I took that as a souvenir.
This is the went for the Adam Halford battle.
Yeah, when that's right, yeah.
You were going to be given a military medal, but it was cancelled because of the row with the officer.
Yeah. So that's when I really knew about it. I didn't really know too much about it before, but that... I saw what it was all about, you see. It was still on the files.
Any other duties as orderly room sergeant?
But, yeah, I mean, what we were doing then, I mean, you prepared part one orders, because the officers used to go off for the day riding or shooting or something. So they would give you details. You would prepare part one orders, and then you go in, end of the day, the adjutant would come back, and you go in and say, yeah, part one order, sir, will you sign them? And he said, yeah, well, just quickly check through them, but he more or less let them run into you. And he signed them, and then you took them back and got them duplicated. You had a duplicator, and they were run through the whatever wake it was, you could set in the duplicator, and they were pinned up on the board, and there were orders who, you know, part one orders said, who's orderly room sergeant, who's orderly room corporal for the following day, who's the guard commander. Usual sort of peacetime thing. And you got into that swing. And then, of course, there was a general running, of course, of a battalion. The RSM would say, oh, I want so-and-so done. There were passes. You know, if you wanted to go to Hamburg, you had to have a pass, so you dealt with all the preparation and getting the passes signed for a group to go into Hamburg. And the reason that people wanted to go to Hamburg, I mean, I went on. The Army Welfare Services were running concerts. We had, where I got my taste for good classical music, we went to see, they had is it the old Big Company? Yeah. You know, with the ones that we had seen in Tripoli. And they turned up and they put on Peer Gynt. And most people didn't want to know, so I went there. And I was fascinated by it, by the music and by the play. And I think that introduced me to my love for good classical music from then on. But going back to what I was doing, and see, what you remember that the prisoners that had been taken as far ago as Calais in 1940, right through the desert and what's the name, that they had been sent home, and those that were regulars, those that had been taken to Calais, were being given resettlement leave and so forth, but were going to be coming out towards the battalion. And they were also asking about married quarters. So, as all different sergeants, part of my job was to check on who was coming back, what the situation was for requisitioning property or where they could go for married quarters. The demobilisation was shortly to come up because it started at Group 1, not that anybody in. I think the earliest group we had was about Group 12. So we prepared a booklet ourselves, a guide to demobilisation, what happens, what the process was, what will happen when you get back into Civvy Street, how you would need an identity card, how you would get paid when you're on demob leave, all that type of thing. And we prepared a booklet that, you know, forget it, quite a number of pages, and stapled it up and there. So, you know, there was more than enough to keep us going. And
You'd gone back up to sergeant. When did that happen? Was it quite quick once you'd been there once, busted down?
Yeah,
get back up quickly?
Yeah, you see, the reason it happened, you see, you've got to remember that experienced people, fully trained people, weren't in a great abundance because you kept getting casualties and you got... And what used to happen, I mean, I can remember on one occasion, we were moving forward and they said, "All right, we want you to take..." I said, "Not me. What do you mean, not you? You know, you've got 2 or 3 years experience." I said, "Yeah, but I'm a rifleman now." So quickly, you suddenly, oh, right, you suddenly found you were a lance corporal or something. They make you up quick because they had no option. And this is it, you know, almost how it happened, you know, what they called in the field, you know, so with it, like, with a casualty or a need. They would suddenly make people up very quickly, get word of mouth, and it would be, yes, it would be in orders, you know, go up, and that was it.
Did you get, but you didn't get into trouble that during the
no,
period?
No, I was on my best behaviour because I was concerned then, I didn't want my demob delayed, so you suddenly started behaving.
Now, what about, you seem to have organised a pantomime,
yeah.
Cinderella.
Yeah.
What do you remember of that? That was Christmas 45.
Yeah.
B Company, your company. What do you remember of that?
Well, it was very good. They wrote this thing up with, you know, with the various quips in, you know, about which applied to your service or other people in the company. And we had one chap who could take off one of the captains. And he was almost a spitting image, you know, a bit like Mike Yarwood. And he brought the house down, you know. Even the colonel was in fits over this, you know. It was very good. And everybody was settling into the fun of the thing. And the other thing we did, we started our... See, because it was this non-fraternisation with the Germans only lasted for... sort of 2 or 3 months where you walked by, didn't smoke and glared at each other, but it was obvious that if they went into, you know, the barracks were just on the outskirts of Gluckstead. If you went in and there were a lot of very shapely fraulines, that it wasn't going to be long before somebody started chatting them up. And whilst the marriage between Germans and British troops was held in force, the non-fraternisation ban was dropped after a couple of months.
And how did you get on with the Germans yourself?
I got on all right with them. It was quite pleasant. In fact, I used to go and visit one family nearby, and I found them very pleasant, you know. So, mind you, up at Gluckstead, that was an area which hadn't been touched by the war. So they hadn't experienced any of the war, really. In fact, I went back there 25 years later, and apart from one shopfront, the place was exactly the same. The German dentist that I went to was still there. The open-air swimming pool was still there. And the only difference was that it was German guard at the barracks, German naval barracks, instead of a British guard. So it was an area which hadn't been touched by the war. It was a... So we got on quite well with them, and we organised a dance in the Unter den Linden. It was
Tell me about that. What was it like?
It was just outside the town. It was one of these sort of beer cellars, and so and we organised dances there. And I always remember the place. It was always, the white paint was peeling off. When I drove past it 25 years later, I said to my wife, it's down here. And it was exactly the same. The white paint was still peeling off it, no doubt. Been repainted, but it still looked no different 25 years later. And we went in and we could get hold of, it was rather weak beer, but we could get hold of German beer. And the first dance we had, the German naval personnel were still there. And we allowed them to come along as well. And
who provided the music?
A local band, or I don't know where we gathered it from, but it was a local band.
A German band.
Yeah, sort of three or four piece band, and that was it. You know, they sort of, and most only the people that played there in, all the time. You know, the few that were left, and they gathered, and it started off with the corporals organised a dance there, and initially it was going to be for the displaced Polish women that had been on farms and so forth, workers, and they did make a mistake. They inverted some of the locals as well, and they spent all the whole evening glaring daggers from one side of the dance floor to the other, and in the end, it worked out. They came, obviously, because by then, you know, we had some sort of refreshment. We got some weak German beer. But the most thing, we got sort of cakes, cream cakes and donuts and that, you know, something, things that they hadn't seen for a long while. And they didn't come because they liked us, but they came because of the cakes, I think, initially. But it developed, and one or two of them, I met two of them after the war, who are married girls from Gluckstadt. You know, they were the younger ones who stopped on after I'd left, and then I bumped into them in England, and they said, oh, you remember Heidi, you know, from Gluckstadt, and they got married. So
what about the displaced persons camp? Were you responsible for a local one? Was there
No, there was no local one. We shipped them off, and they were going to be repatriated. That wasn't our problem. I really don't know what we were doing there. You know, it wasn't an area which you had to worry about. We were just based there. I mean, we weren't sort of, apart from the, you know, looking after the disposing of the German wrens and looking after the naval personnel for a few weeks while they cleared the mines. From then on, it was just, we just happened to be there, and we started a training program. Now, I think more or less people had forgotten about us or didn't want us, you know, and they, because we were there a 12 month.
You were there from late May right through to May 46.
Later, because I came out, I got demobbed from there, and I came out in the July, 12 months later.
July 46.
Yeah, July 46.
Now, anything happened while you were there? I mean, any events, or was it just all sort of a no, routine, pleasant life?
Just a routine, pleasant life. We carried on, and I say, we'd got football matches arranged, and indeed dances, we had concerts, and arranged our own paint of my life. And
what about did you have concert parties visit you there? Or?
No. They came to Hamburg, so we used to go into Hamburg for that. And
what about the black market? You must have been interested in that, because you had an eye for that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, really, the thing was that what had happened was when the war finished, there was an order issued that nobody would take any German mark note over 50 marks. Well, quite honestly, I had a box full of them in German money. I was a millionaire because I used to pick them up. One thing I used to do during my service, if ever we got to a National Socialist headquarters, I always considered that fair game. And I became quite adept at using a couple of grenades to blow a safe or anything like that, you know. And I used to pick up things like, you get them home and then you take the German flag down. I've got one in the other room, and National Socialist gold badge for somebody. All these sort of souvenirs you would pick up, and there would always be bundles of these German marks. So I had an ammunition box that I stuffed them in. But you couldn't, I'd say, spend it. There was nothing to spend it on, and they wouldn't take anything over 50 marks. But as time went by, we established a bit of a peacetime thing. So, in other words, we had a wonderful NCO's mess, Sergeant WO's mess. We didn't pay any fees. They even got some of the regimental silver brought out and put on display. But what we used to do, you couldn't spend the German marks in Germany, but you could in France, because as France had been occupied, they gave them an undertaking that if they had German marks, which they'd been paid for by the occupying troops, they would honour them. So what we would do was send a three-tonner down into France, give them a handful of this money and say, load up with champagne and whatever, cognac, whatever you can get, and bring it back. And tonight the mess night is on me, because it was no good. We used to have some wonderful nights in the mess, you know.
Tell me about the sergeant's mess then. What was it like?
Oh, it was like barracks. It was a first class place, you know. It had been obviously a German NCO's mess, so it was a lovely place. And
what did it offer you? What was it like in there on a night?
Well, you had a bar, but I say the local beer was rather weak. It was all right, but we used to send a truck down because, as I told you, the old hands controlled the orderly room, the passes, the ration cards, the transport, the petrol. It was what was locally referred to as the Black Mafia. And so we controlled everything, and life was very pleasant. So we could send down into France.
But what about the black market? No,
I mean, what was it? You know, nothing really to sell. I mean, in fact...
Or cigarettes.
Oh, yeah, well, whether they... the amount that you got, if you were a smoker, you really couldn't... In fact, if somebody said, look, I remember somebody was a heavy smoker, and when you got one out, you could see him looking at you, and say, all right, go on, you give him one. But the ration you got was, only enough.
So you weren't really aware of the black market?
No, not as such, no. And what we used to do, we started a bridge school, and things like that. It was...
In the sergeant's mess?
Well, in also in the within the barrack, one lot would start it and say, oh, we've got a bridge school going there, and you would go over or go to somebody's billet, whatever your interests were. They were certainly one or two of them got to go into the locals' houses and used to take tins of beef, bully beef along and all that. When you went on leave, they used to bring back tins of coffee. I mean, certainly, there were the odd ones, but what they were trading in, I don't really know. But there certainly were odd ones, because we had one sergeant who went out on a fairly early Asian service group. I think he was about 19 or something. Now, we knew, nobody knew what he was doing, but everybody knew that he was up to something, and he had a lot of fiddles going. He went home on about group 19, and before I got demobbed, he was back again with a commission in the control commission, and he was driving around in a nice big German Mercedes car with a Brom Fraulein to go with it, because whatever he got was, and whatever he was working on was in Germany. He couldn't get it out of the country. And that's why he came back. He joined the control commission so he could enjoy a good life, you see. But really, there wasn't... I mean, in a small... I suppose you call it a small town, rather, you know, village or large village, I don't know which, but it's a small town. You see, there weren't too many people that you could do business with if you were on the black market. I mean, they were... All the locals were looking for them. They could get a tin of coffee off you or some cigarettes and all that. But they were still nervous. You know, it was early days, you know, having... They were nervous of having occupying troops there. And it really wasn't much to trade in, you know. I mean, you know, like Italy, they had a mafia going all the time. So there were always people there around the Naples area, you know, that would got any tyres or petrol. This wasn't so. It was different in Germany, you see. It was not much went on. And there was, I say, people got in with the locals and everybody got on very nicely. It was a very pleasant 12 months.
Now, what about demob? Were you looking forward to
oh, demob? Definitely, yeah. I mean, I was Agent Service Group 32, which might sound high, but there was nothing really up. I mean, about the first one that we got out was somebody who'd been a regular and who was, you know, sort of mid-30s going towards 40. I mean, they went out at about, God, it was the old one or two that went out about Group 12 and 19. It didn't really start getting a few numbers until you got into the early Group 20s, you know, and started getting on there. And
would you have parties when people left? When it's
well, comment, but there was no sort of celebration or anything like that, apart from the chap saying, thank God I'm off. And
tell me about your demobilisation. That's July 46.
Yeah, and what happened was that the group of you, in my group, being a sergeant, I was going to be in charge of them. There were about 8 or 10 in my group, and you appeared before the CO, and he said, right, what they were trying to do then, they were offering training for anybody that wanted to be a teacher, because it was a short one, and then they were trying to get people to stop in the army, because they had to occupy the country. So the first thing they said, have you got a job to go to? And yes. Have you got a house to live in or a flat? Well, wouldn't you like to sign on? Now, I was offered... I said yes to both of them. I've got a flat, you know, and I'm married. I want to get back home, and I've got a job because the firm had kept the job open. And they said, well, wouldn't you like to sign on for 3 years? I said, no way.
Why not? I mean, just...
I'd had enough, 6 years. I mean, that was enough. I was anxious to get out, and if I wanted my job back, I had to take it when my demob came up. You know, I couldn't say, well, leave it open for 3 years. As I say, having got married, I mean, I'd got married, had a short disembarkation leave, and I'd had one leave from Germany. So, you know, my wife wouldn't have been too happy, nor was I, you know, so...